Andrew and George talk to people sometimes.
Hey, word on the street, I'm a suspect. Hanging with the killers in the projects. Tato on the barrel, keep quiet. Catch a nigga slipping from behind. OG Bobby Johnson. OG Bobby Johnson. OG Bobby Johnson.
Hello, welcome. This is Drew and George Talk to People Sometime. That's George Bates.
That's Drew Brooks. We're both germs.
We're both wild and crazy germs.
Yep.
Can we just hold on a second?
Sure.
First of all, I want to say...
Let's start the podcast
with a hold.
By holding on a second. You
right,
fuck. You fuck.
You're just steady mad at me. I want to keep you mad at me, man. That's the way it goes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad I'm leaving town for 3 days because I can't stand the look of you.
All right,
right
there's
now.
A couple things. You can't stand the look of me. You're leaving town for a couple of days.
Yeah.
This podcast is an exceptional podcast.
This is a groundbreaking podcast, whether you fucking say it or not.
Right.
Sorry, that's my anger.
Well,
this week's guest was Mike Simpson, aka Easy Mike, aka Dirty Diggle.
AKA one half of the production duo, the Dust Brothers.
AKA
if you know an album
all,
called Paul's
it.
Boutique by the Beastie Boys, if you know an album called Beck's Odelay,
sure. If you know you albums know, at all, then you know Mike Simpson.
Then you know Mike Simpson.
A prolific person
in the world of hip hop and music production and film scoring.
If you can taste vegan food, the difference between a good vegan meal and a hole in your ass, then you know Mike Simpson.
Sure, that's a way of talking.
It doesn't mean anything because it doesn't make sense, but that's a way of talking. I like having another vegan on the podcast.
Oh, man, it was great. You guys, like, locked eyes, and then there was, like, hearts in your eyes.
Yeah,
and
we have serenity between ourselves,
beans. But I gotta tell you, this is a
PR machine.
And, secret PR machine, which you'll get a taste of. Or maybe you won't, because he's a ghost. He's an enigma. He is a Kaiser Sulce.
Yep, he's the type of, like, art piece that will peel off of a brick wall and walk down the street.
It will walk down the street.
Yes, sir.
But I have to tell you, this is amazing. This is episode 19. This is Mike Simpson. This is incredible. This is a piece of music history. Mm-hmm. This is like, he is an amazing human, super talented. Brought us Tenacious D's album, for God's sakes. I mean, this is a big, big deal.
Yep. But I still don't know any of these things.
I know. And then you look at me with these eyes of bewilderment. But I will tell you this. I want to also thank all the people listening, right?
Yeah.
And please, right? Don't you want them to rate and subscribe? Not everybody.
There's bound to be a person out there that's listening and being real shitty.
Yes.
To like their family or loved
ones. What do you have
to
say to that one person that's listening and shitty?
Hey, man, do your own thing. I don't care. I can't control you. You know what I'm saying? Keep listening.
Okay. That's a way of talking to a guy.
Yeah,
so you're really doing things in a way.
No, I'm not going to get up on my own pedestal. I got my own damn problems, dude. Don't worry about it.
Little do they know that listeners...
Don't get caught by the cops.
George is pacing back and forth in the room.
Yeah, don't worry about it. I'm digging a hole in my nose. You understand? thank you for listening just across the board.
If you were going to rate and review the podcast, like maybe our listeners might...
Out of 5 stars, I'd give it 1.
Okay. Wait, that's bad advice. Okay. Listeners, please do not listen to any advice that George gives you or just do the opposite because we really thank you for listening, but boy, it would be a real treat if they rated this podcast and they reviewed it and subscribed and
totally
did all
true.
The things that they're supposed to do, but I know
maybe
it's sometimes really tough to do it.
Yeah, of course it is. Maybe you could show me how to do it and I'll do it for our podcast my damn self.
Okay, maybe we'll just let George do it for you.
So subscribe, rate, repeat.
Perfect. Okay, great. Here it is.
Mike Simpson,
episode 9. So long, I can lean on it. Free my niggas like behind bars. Move 100 pounds for a lawyer, beat the charge. Beat it. Pack, take down, run the ballet, muscle fall. If a nigga try to rob, I can hit him with the hook. Word on the street, I'm a suspect. Hanging with the killers in the projects. Tato on the barrel, keep quiet. Catch a nigga slipping from behind.
OG, Bobby, Josh. Hey, OG, Bobby, Josh.
But it's like, I can hit record on an iPad now and just be like, here we go. And it's totally amazing.
Oh, it's crazy. So, two things.
Are you recording?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Welcome to Drew and Josh.
Exactly. Thanks,
Mike Simpson. Today's episode features PR Machine.
PR Machine.
Oh, man. This is a big
hint. His representation. Where are you from originally?
Originally from New York.
New York? Nice.
From the city.
From the city. And how long have you been out here?
Since 1978.
Oh my gosh. Can I get right down into it?
Sure.
Tom Loke. That record, Loke After Dark.
You did Loke?
It is, that's the whole Delicious thing, right? I don't know much about it, but that record destroyed particular moment. Like, what? Can you
did
tell?
He smoke a lot of cigarettes?
Yeah, no, that was just his voice. You know, I was hosting a hip-hop show, radio show out in Claremont.
Yeah.
Back in the early 80s when I was in college. And I used to have local rap. I mean, the rap scene was so small in California. I think my show was the first rap.
This is in Claremont?
This is in Claremont, yeah.
Why Claremont?
Well, that's where I went to school.
Oh, okay,
I was going
there
to college out there. Yeah.
All right.
And so we used to have local talent, you know, come and guest host the show.
Right.
And I get a call from some guy in LA, and he's like, "Hey, I've got this rapper Tone Loke, and he's putting out a record called Chiba Chiba, and I've listened to your show, and I think you guys would probably like it. Can I send the record over?" So he sent us the record, and it was this, you know, 12-inch, and we flipped out. It was incredible.
Oh my
and
God!
Probably played it four times that night, and then the guy calls back and he says, "Hey, could I have Loke come down and come down to the station?" And so Loke came down the next week and guest hosted the show, and I had produced these instrumental tracks.
Yeah.
I had to read public service announcements during the show.
So you read your own.
And so the station was KSPC 88.7. They had a very powerful transmitter depending on the atmospheric conditions, the signal would go from Santa Barbara down to San Diego.
Holy shit.
That's a decent
look. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
And so the station mainly was alternative music, which back then sounded just like, you know, you tune into the station and think you were caught between stations most of the time.
Great way to describe it.
And so they had these pre-recorded public service announcements that were completely out of context for a hip-hop show.
Yeah.
So I produced these instrumental tracks, and I would read the public service announcements over these tracks. Loke heard the PSAs when he was down there. He's like, "Oh man, who made these tracks? Man, I'm making a record. I need some beats."
No kidding.
Yeah. So that's how that had all came together. And Delicious Vinyl had just started. He was the first release.
The first. Oh wow.
And
I think one of those chairs were about to break.
Yeah. Oh, they're ghost chairs.
Yeah. And so that was the early days of Delicious. So they were just setting up a studio in this guy Matt Dyke's living room on a brake shop on Santa Monica Boulevard in Gower, right above a brake shop. And
what a great name!
And we
label,
yeah, Delicious Vinyl.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. And did you see that fire, or did you see that sort of catch fire with that? Did you know, like, at that moment you were like, "Oh, this guy, right? This is gonna be."
It, you know, when you're making it, you're not really thinking about that. You know, we weren't thinking about that stuff because you know, I was working on. It was sort of like the old. It became sort of like the old Motown vibe, where we would make tracks, and then the different artists on the label would each come in and try a vocal over the track, and whoever had the best vocal would win the track.
Which is
what happened in Motown too. They would have the whole, you know.
It was like Kingston and stuff like that, like the whole Jamaican scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Have people round robin.
Exactly.
Like that. Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that kind of like an audition, kind of?
I mean, it just works out that way, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, when you're starting out and you have all these artists and new artists and you're trying to make records for all of them and they're all good, yeah.
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 And
who were some of the other artists?
This guy Def Jeff, Young MC, Body and Soul, these female rappers.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Mellow Man Ace.
can't believe
that. Bust a Move.
That was MC. Yeah, that was MC.
Yeah, MC was good, yeah. Mellow Man Ace.
Oh. He was a Cuban rapper.
Whoa.
And he had, what was his, he had a hit. It was over Tom Sawyer.
Perfect. That's amazing. And so, like, what?
No, that wasn't it. What was his hit? God, his hit. Maybe it was like, was it Black Magic Woman? It was one of those songs. It was over a classic rock loop.
Wow. Speaking of loops, what was the process? You just started figuring it out on your own? Like, did you have a musical background? Did you know,
How
to, like, take things and loop them and stuff?
I didn't. I started out making in the early days of rap.
Yeah.
Before I had two turntables and DJs, in the parks were extending, the breaks on records and extending the best parts of records by having two turntables and cutting back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
And looping it physically that way. I would do pause tape loops. So I would record the record onto a cassette and then I would hit pause and then start the record over again and release it and do extend, make
manual, dude.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Manual looping. And then once I got turntables, I could do it live on turntables.
Right.
And then in the super early days of sampling, I just figured out how to do it. I mean, the first loops I made were on guitar pedals, and they were they were these little delay pedals,
right,
that you had a very short, like a half a second or a second of sampling. It would record it, and you could hit the pedal and trigger it. And so I started doing that, and then it was painstaking. I mean, I
can't even imagine. You tell that to some, like, it's a child now, and they're just like, that's like churning butter.
Yeah.
To a child. It's so crazy.
Well, there were some. Eventually, it ramped up to doing it on a Mac, where there was actually a user interface. And it started out on PC.
Yeah, but how far along were you? Like, had you already done? You already made records up until that point, right? Or was it the Mac that kind of?
No,
it was always there.
No, the when I first started out, it was all on a 4-track, and it was all it's so technical, it's very complicated.
Yeah.
But basically, we figured out how to run a sequencer. You'd print time code onto a track of a tape, and then the time code you would use the time code to trigger. You could trigger one loop at a time, so you'd get a loop and you'd sync it and you'd put it on tape, and then you'd go back. You'd rewind the tape and you'd put another loop, and then you'd have to try to get that to synchronize with the other loop that was on tape.
And if the atmospheric pressure was just right,
exactly.
Could possibly.
It was all so technical, but it was painstaking and it took forever. I mean, now things, that take one mouse click would literally take 6-7 hours to perform the same function. And then,
how do you feel that's affected music?
I think music. Right now, I think music's at a pretty great point.
It's a cool place.
I'm a true hip hop devotee, and I think hip hop is in its finest, one of its finest hours right now.
It's just true.
Musically and production wise,
it had less of an effect on like the mostly instrumental types of music, like the rock and shit seems to be suffering. To me, like instrumental.
There's something, they took the heavy out of heavy metal. Like, it doesn't seem like anybody's like really like. I remember like with heavy metal, I remember like looking at Lemmy from Motorhead and being like, that guy looks super dangerous.
Yeah.
And now I look at any artist out there who's doing metal music or something like that, and I'm like,
and they're beautiful.
I could probably, I could wrestle you to the ground. I could probably get you to the ground.
You're small.
Yeah, and I'm a small guy. But it's so unthreatening, or non-threatening to me. It's amazing.
But, I think what's happened is, I think that the stuff that's not in the mainstream has just found its audience.
Yeah.
And so, record companies you used to have to use this sort of blanketing approach of putting the music out there on MTV or paying radio to play it, or so that people would actually hear it.
Yeah.
But now people who want that kind of music, they just kind of find it. Yeah, find it. And so,
you know what it is for me? It started with like blog posts from guys. Yeah, being like, yo, I think this is great. And he'd be in England and I'd be like, oh, neat. And I would have to, as a kid, to find cool music, I'd have to like read cool indie newspapers and like try to dive into something to try to like get something, and 9 times out of 10 my local CD store or whatever would never have it.
Right.
And I'd be like, cool, and I'd have to order out. But it was like that, to know you that a blog post can change an artist's last week. Like instantly. It's amazing to me.
Yeah.
It is. And I think you're right, because the trends in music should be kind of dictated that way, right? Like
from
the
great, well, I've read articles about they use the example of Lady Gaga. She puts out an album and sells a million records as soon as it comes out, and then they try to promote, you know, they try to do additional promotion, and she's all over the TV, all over, you know, she's everywhere, but they can't really sell any more records. Despite that, all that promotion, they don't really sell that many more records.
Yeah.
And then you've got, they reference this metal, this like heavy metal band that they put out records, no one else has heard, they sell a million records every time too that they put out, but without, they don't do any promotion, and they just have an audience, and so it's interesting how that's changed, because back in the day you could promote a record and get more, you know, and get more sales, and it just doesn't seem to happen anymore. It's just like people have their audience,
and it's very true, and people are really connected to that audience, whether it be Twitter or whatever, they're kind of like managing it themselves.
Yeah, do we need a new genre? Music.
Yeah,
some sort of.
Not a bad idea.
New hand clapping.
Mouth sounds.
What was.
Robot. Electronic.
Yeah, PR machine, good idea.
Just animal noises. What was music that influenced you? Like, what did you like grow up being like? That's the best.
My first concert was the Jackson 5.
Holy shit!
Yeah, what? Jackson 5, Hughes Corporation, and Blue Magic. And this was 1973.
Oh, okay. So this is a little further along with the Jackson
Radio City Music Hall. Yeah.
Wow.
Janet, it was the first tour that Janet actually had a little number where she came out and...
Janet's a rival.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. And then... I mean, I grew up listening mostly to black music.
You know,
Stevie Wonder, Kool and the Gang, Parliament Funkadelic, Jimmy Castor Bunch, Earth, Wind & Fire, Ohio Players, all that, you know. That's,
what are the chances? Elroy Brothers.
It was the Brothers Johnson, right?
Brothers Johnson. That was a little later, yeah.
Yeah. That was a hit. They made some cool. That Strawberry Letter 23 is a bananas track.
It's a crazy record.
And
you know, you ask if I have any musical training, and those records were my musical training. I mean, that's, you know, you listen to a record like that, and that's a lesson in production. You know, Strawberry Letter 23 is just a lesson in record production in itself.
Crazy.
And then my mom would listen to the Beatles, so at home, I would hear the Beatles, which are all lessons in production.
Exactly.
Songwriting, and you know,
just being surrounded by good music.
Yeah, and it was cool. I remember back then the radio stations. You'd hear Kool and the Gang and Earth, Wind and Fire and the Jackson 5 and Stevie Wonder, and then you'd hear, you know, Crosby, Stills. You know, you'd hear.
It was mixed.
It wasn't. It felt like mainstream radio back then wasn't quite as segregated.
That's so.
It goes back to that whole thing we were talking about earlier about like them having such a more specific demographic for every single thing.
Right.
And like,
yeah.
Whether it's clicking on something online and then the ads start to personalize for you, that was the early.
Well, I've had this theory about music, which is that the cream always rises to the top.
Yeah, you know? True.
And I mean, to me, that explains like Wild Thing, Tone Loc taking.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just an instant.
It was
instantaneous.
But as soon as I heard that guitar sound, I was like, over. It's over.
No, I know.
Yeah, you heard it before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably because I heard it before.
I loved it again.
That's totally
but
true.
Then,
yeah.
But then similarly, like with Hanson's Umbop, I mean, that was the same thing. I mean, you hear that song, it's undeniable hit. Just first listen.
It really is.
By the end of the song, the first time you hear it, by the end of the song, you're singing along with it.
Regardless of who you are, because I remember being like, damn, it's in my head again. It's going, it's like... taking that can be like one of those things where you do like it is this instant recognizable
just
thing.
Like you just instantly knew that was Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, exactly. With, oh yeah, that's right. Bringing us right back to the
Maggie Eyes. Thing. I mean, I only had to hear the first time I heard
her. Robin Thicke
or Marvin Gaye.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, man, that's so true. I always think about James Brown too because like it seems like there was almost a decade of him being sampled in hip hop.
Yeah,
it was. That's a crazy number. But that's how I found out about James Brown was through hip hop. It was the reverse. And I remember hearing the original, like James Brown, like the one where he's coming. He's in jail. He's like in the jail. That record where he's sitting on a jail cell or whatever. I don't know, but that is the one that had the funky drummer on it. I think. And I was just like. It was unbelievable. It was a record that I felt like was undeniable. And then I was like, I've heard that one piece. That
so
one.
So many times.
So many times in so many songs. Yeah. And it's crazy because it is. And then it defined a genre. Because didn't it, like the splicing up of that make like drum and bass and stuff like that?
Kind of.
Yeah, it's wild to think about the subgenres of subgenres and
off that one
off of this
one bar of drum
which is what has it yet?
Yeah, I mean it's just iconic.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know?
Oh,
I was thinking of a horn blast.
They spread it up for like NWA, and it was it became so hardcore. Yeah. And have you seen the trailer for the new the Straight Outta Compton?
Yeah,
that actually looks amazing.
I think it's gonna be good.
Oh man, they got Paul Giamatti in it too.
It's crazy. How many different places have you lived in California?
Well, when I first moved out here, I lived in Sherman Oaks in the Valley.
Yeah.
And then I went to college in Claremont. And then from Claremont, I lived in West Hollywood, then Koreatown, then Silver Lake, Los Feliz, and Pasadena.
Uh-huh. All cool spots.
Hell yeah.
For the most part.
But you started just going east and south.
Trying to get away from the suckers.
Watching that trailer, I was like, wow, the Straight Outta Compton trailer, I was like, we're that far along, where that's like a movie, like document, like a bio doc pic of a rap group, and it's taken completely seriously,
right?
Like not as a joke or anything. That's pretty amazing because the influence, you know. I was watching the MTV footage of them being interviewed on the back of a truck that had to be.
Oh yeah.
It was unbelievable. They had them on the back of this, like
they were giving them a tour of Compton.
Yeah. And they had the white people, and they were like kind of protecting them a little bit.
Hey, right?
It's so shitty.
That's what it was. It was a Compton hayride.
It was unbelievable. Yeah,
you had to buy something.
It was crazy.
Legal. And it was like, holy shit, this is fucking desolate. No one out. There's two of them. Oh.
It's crazy.
Compton Hayride.
Compton Hayride.
Yeah, this guy that lived across the hall from me at Pitzer College ended up, his brother was getting married in South Central and asked me to come down and DJ the wedding. And oh my god, it was such a crazy experience. The neighborhood was really quiet. There was nothing, you know. It was all the houses had chain link fences, and it was one story houses,
quiet, very quiet.
No trees.
Everything was going really well, and then And then, like, some shit went, you know, like, some people heard the music and came down to see what was going on, and they had guns, and people were scuffling around. it got real for a second. I mean, nothing ended up happening. But,
yeah.
But you could sense, you know.
You felt the tension and all that.
You could feel it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't that cool to live there.
That's so wild. The tension is the thing you can feel. It's just like, it's not even spidey sense, but you're like, it's going to go down. It will go down.
It could go down.
Yeah, exactly.
I got weed one when I first moved to Hollywood with these guys that lived on my floor. I lived on top of Argyle. And at like 2 a.m., went to go buy weed with these guys. I go to the front seat, just right up, you know, South Central. I don't, you know, and dudes just came out of the darkness, got to the car. It was crazy, just like out of Rise in the Hood. It was like, shit, I am so stupid. What am I doing here?
Yeah, but you don't even have to drive that far for that. I have a college buddy who back in the day would get really drunk and then at midnight would say, "Come on, Mike, come on, man, you gotta give me a ride." I'm like, "Where are we going?"
Like,
"I'm gonna go down to Hollywood Boulevard, I'm gonna get some crack." I said, "Hey, man, I'm not driving you to get crack.
I'll come with you, but I'm not driving.
I'm not driving." So, "All right, I'm gonna call a limo." So he'd call his limo and "Hey, man, how do you even know where to get crack?" And he said, "Anybody who's on the street between, you know, Western and Vermont," or what, I can't remember what the streets were, but he said, "Anybody who's on the street at this time of night is selling crack." And literally, like, they come out of the woodwork. You pull up to the curb and they're fighting for your business. You know, three guys will come up and try to sell you crack.
Wow.
It's amazing.
It's an entirely different sort of microcosm that's, like, taking place at night, you know? That's so crazy.
We should roll up and then immediately just, like, surprise podcast. Like, Whitney.
This was 10 years ago, so I don't know if that's still the...
It's definitely still... It may not
people
be
still
there.
Smoke crack?
Yeah, they do.
I did the same shit when I was probably 20 years old in Richmond, which was a horrible fucking city.
Yeah.
Virginia?
In Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah.
And I went down to Creighton Court, you know, again, midnight. But this was me and another white guy, and they just took our money.
Took our money. Unbelievable. Did you know about the sort of like Compton reputation in York?
No.
Was it?
Well,
no,
I lived, well,
it really came about during that era.
No, 78, I think, was even before Compton was on the map. You know, because in terms of hip hop, I'm trying to remember. Well, in 78, when I moved out here, basically there were only, you know, four or five records that you could even hear.
What, West Coast hip-hop?
I don't think there was any West Coast hip-hop.
Didn't that start at NWA? Don't you think that it sort of like came from that, like the West Coast hip-hop kind of put it on the map?
Oh, for sure.
Is there any other, like, what, how, and you said you like really like the state of hip hop now. Like, what are there specific things about it that you like, or that you like are listening to? Like, what's going on?
The main thing I've been listening. Well, I listen to Power 106, so I listen to the mainstream. You know, when I'm in the car.
Yeah,
I just listen to the mainstream.
Does that introduce you to artists in a way? Like, if you hear something from an artist you haven't heard from on the radio, will you log their albums?
You know, it's more my son is more the tracker of new artists.
Yeah.
So when he'll do that, if we hear some, you know, if we hear something good on the radio, he'll go back and find all the songs
and then bring
and
you
figure,
the good
and figure
shit.
Out what the, figure out what the good ones are.
Yeah.
But
he's the crate digger.
But he turned me on to this guy Q-U-E, who's this rapper out of Atlanta, and I guess it's trap music. Which I really like.
Me too.
And this guy is just particularly good. I guess he had a song that they did play on Power 106 called OG Bobby Johnson, which was, I guess it's sort of a cult classic at this point. And it's only a couple years old. But,
that sounds right. Yeah.
But all of his stuff is really good. And he writes good choruses. And he does this thing where most people will repeat the chorus twice, but he does it four times. And so he really drills them.
You know, that's all the meaning of the song.
It really drives home. Yeah. And
I felt that when I listened to Gucci Mane for the first time. I was like, this guy's really hammering home his point. Yeah. He will say Gucci 400 times in a song, and I'm okay with it. Yeah. Somehow I'm okay with
Gucci.
It.
But I feel like this guy Q, I feel like he's like a rapper's rapper, because he has collaborations with, you know, 2 Chainz and Snoop Dogg, and I mean all the best rappers have done songs with him.
Yeah.
And so I feel like he must, like I say, he's a rapper's rapper, because they all read. But for some reason, he's not, I feel like he should be bigger, you know? Like,
yeah.
I do stuff on Power 106. I'm like, God, his Q stuff is just as good, if not better, than stuff. But I think, you know, the music right now, it's super musical. You know,
there was
a long time where they were trying to fuse singing and rap, and it just felt totally forced and
really false.
Super corny.
Totally.
And painful. It was just trying to make it too bubblegum.
Yeah, but now push all those elements together and make the perfect track.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But now I feel like the songs are really musical. The choruses are great.
Yeah.
And the flows keep changing. You know, you think after like Rakim or Chuck D, how could it get better than that?
Right.
Or how do you do anything different?
Totally.
And it keeps evolving, and I'm always surprised that they're able to keep making it better and better and better.
Yeah.
And the production to me right now is insane. I mean, it's crazy. It's so deep, you know.
Yeah. Have you heard that the Kanye Paul McCartney collaborator?
I'm not feeling that.
Yeah. It's just like, what? Like, it's a pretty crazy endeavor.
It's like heads of state meeting and just like shaking a hand.
It's really
how much older stuff do you expose the kids to, or do you just let them, like you said, they'll kind of make their own musical decisions?
My kids, they just, I mean, my daughter doesn't seem to have the connection with music that my son does. My son always has music on. He's always listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
And he really likes the hardcore hip hop stuff, you know.
He
pretty much, we have very similar tastes. And
that's great.
And then stuff. Oh, you know, my daughter likes Katy Perry. Like, I took her to I'm a huge Katy Perry fan too.
Yeah.
I think she's really good.
So she connects with what is like currently that age group's
I saw her halftime show, man. It knocked me on my socks.
You hear a damn shit.
I took my daughter to see Katy Perry, and it was one of the better concerts I've ever seen. I mean, it was like seeing Cirque du Soleil, but with a great singer singing songs that are fun.
It's really true, yeah, and they're really well done as songs.
Really well done.
You're absolutely right. Yeah,
yeah. The production on her stuff is fantastic.
That's the undeniability of that certain stuff where you're like, I'll escape my normal genres for something. That's the undeniability. That's fascinating to me.
Well, when it's well done, like I don't know, Justin Timberlake. I think his stuff is fantastic too. I mean, to me, it feels like what Michael Jackson felt like when I was listening to Michael Jackson back then. You know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I was watching We Are behind the scenes of We Are the World.
Uh-huh.
It's bananas. It's a banana show, but it shows some footage of him recording his voice for background vocals, or and he shoots it off like it's just nothing. It's like breathing. And it's so everybody else is really going for it and trying to get up there. Huey Lewis is like really steamed and sweaty and trying to go for it. And he's just like, and hit it. Bang, and just knocks it out. And it's incredible to watch. Huh. Like, he's truly like amazing to me. Yeah. It's like, it's so, I don't think we see a lot of that, but it's like there was something that was so like, he just kept on producing amazing things for the longest time. Like,
well, and also he was I mean, it's a similar thing because you have a super talented guy working with Quincy Jones, you know? Before that, it was like the corporation, you know, like the early Jackson 5 stuff were these guys who were the most badass, arguably the most badass songwriters and musicians ever to live. You know, I mean, they wrote all those hit songs.
Jeez.
And then you got Michael working with Quincy, and you got Justin Timberlake working with Timbaland.
Yeah. Here we go.
Yeah.
There's those amazing partnerships. It's like...
My son also likes Maroon 5.
Yeah.
Oh, and,
yeah.
And it's funny because to hear mostly this hardcore hip-hop, and then every once in a while a Maroon 5 song, you know,
shuffles in. Yeah,
and I said to him, I said, you know, when you're my age... You won't remember these hip hop songs, but you'll remember those Maroon 5 songs.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, sort of melodic stuff, and also like it does feel like hip hop moments are coming and going quicker than a lot of other.
Yes.
It's really fast.
It's
like,
very.
And the vernacular is so fast you can't even make a T-shirt about it.
Right,
it's crazy. It's so amazing. It's like a lot of I related a lot to comedy because I feel like the language of comedy shifts so fast because something that is funny today is not funny tomorrow, or the tone of something. And I feel like that is so easily said about hip hop, is that one song today could drop and everybody would be saying the exact same catchphrase, and then a week later they'll be like, that's a dad joke, and you're just like, what? What? Like, it's so quick.
It's just the viral nature of our existence now. Things just have a very short shelf life because you're just bombarded with new
and access to it. You have infinite.
But everyone's trying. It's getting to the point of desperation now. I feel like with the clickbait, it's just all so, it's so uninteresting at this point.
Yeah,
for the most part. And,
but that's interesting. Do you still feel like I have to let it be known, you're wearing the crispiest pair of Stan Smiths I've ever seen.
Tell everybody you saved them for. Don't you buy them?
I was hoarding them. Yeah, I was. Now
they're so crispy.
They started making new ones again, so now I don't have to hoard them anymore.
They brought them back.
I have 10 pair at home, and then also the Rod Labors. I have a bunch of Rod.
Oh yeah, I have the Labors too.
Just having more than a few pairs, you can keep them pretty crispy.
Yeah,
but you're right. They kill them.
Yeah,
I got like six pairs of these pants.
Yeah, it's just you find something and you're just like, I'm gonna have a lot of those. It's absolutely true.
Yeah. You have clickbait, right?
Yeah, we were talking. Thank you for bringing us back.
I was gonna ask you about sports. What? Just gonna fucking go hard left.
Yeah, just shift it.
That'll be a short conversation.
Thank you for coming.
That's hot. Did you ever have to play any? Were you?
Oh, I was a good basketball player. No, I was. I used to be really into sports. I played tackle football. You know,
you were hockey, like
roller hockey. Yeah, yeah. Growing up in New York, I mean, basically from 3 o'clock until late, you know, until 7 or 8 at night, you know, my whole crew, we were unsupervised. So we, you know, after school, if it was football season, we played football. If it was, you know, if it was basketball season, we played basketball. If it was hockey season, we played roller hockey with the old skates with ceramic wheels.
Whoa.
And the metal ball bearings, like...
You feel like you're grinding in a concert.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And you were on, basically. And so we played. So I was a hardcore sports fan. And then, and was a huge Knicks fan. And then moved to LA and became a huge Laker fan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I actually tried out for the Lakers as a publicity stunt. I don't know if you remember when Master P tried out for.
Absolutely, I totally remember.
And and he was good.
What was the team?
I can't remember.
It was just celebrity tryout.
No, he was a really good basketball player.
Yeah, he's super tall.
And
what?
No, really good basketball player. So the deal was that this is what I heard. This could be a rumor, but that. That they sold tickets to the audition, you know, to the tryouts when he tried out, and they sold more tickets than they would during a normal season basketball game. And so they considered he wasn't really good enough to be on the team, but he was good enough to play in the NBA. You know, like he could play in the NBA.
He could do it.
He could have done it, and they would sell. And he would have been a huge draw. You know. And so I heard that they were considering it. You know, considering, or that he made the first guy. I can't remember what the deal was. But as I thought it would be funny if I tried out for the Lakers. And so the guy that was running my record label was a publicist, and he called the publicist for the Lakers and said, "Hey, this guy Mike wants to know if he can come and
this guy Mike
and try it." And the publicist.
What year was this? When was this? Do you know?
Let's see. I want to say 96.
Okay.
So,
so you're Kobe Shaq, right?
No, exactly. So I have pictures. So basically,
I see the picture of you and Kobe.
Yeah, it's on my website. So the guy, the publicist for the Lakers, was a fan of this Eels record that I had made.
Oh, that's
and knew when he said Mike Simpson. He's like, Mike Simpson.
That was a great Eels record.
Who did the Eels? And so the guy was like, "Oh yeah, we'll set something up." So I went down there. They actually, Kobe was number 8 back then, and they gave me number 24, which is really weird.
Whoa!
And so I got to scrimmage at the Forum. I got to scrimmage with the Lakers, and I played one on one against Kobe, one on one against Shaq. Had a photographer there shooting the whole thing.
You got pictures of you one on one versus Shaq.
I scored twice on Kobe. So I was pretty good. I was a pretty good basketball player. I was actually good. I played in high school.
Oh my gosh!
But now I don't follow sports at all. I don't really care. I hear that there's some brouhaha with Kobe. Something. What is going on with that? They want him to quit, or
I don't want to pay him anymore.
They don't want to pay.
He seems to be clashing a bit, like with the players too. And
the highlight I read to me like, just trade me.
But then you're letting your entire legacy.
You're a franchise player. You're like, or what is that? What they call it?
But he's not able to play. So he doesn't want to retire like this.
So what does he get? $25 million a year now, and so they don't want to pay.
So it's crippling the team.
It's crippling the team
because like that they're paying Kobe.
Yeah,
and he's hurt.
So I mean, here's a question. I mean, he's got to be worth what, $500 million?
Yeah,
probably. Right.
I would imagine.
So the dude could play a
free season. $25 million, is it worth it? Is it worth it to go to another team to play for one more year to make $25 million?
I think it is.
You think it is? It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lifestyle you got to maintain.
Yeah.
Probably $25 million a year that he spends.
But the thing is, he's not like any athlete. When he retires, he's going to walk right into his broadcasting.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And beyond, because he's a pretty likable dude, right?
Is he?
No, he's got a reputation. He expressed a documentary coming out about his reputation as being a villain.
When I played against him and auditioned, he couldn't have been nicer. He couldn't have been nicer.
That was the start of his career.
He was super cool. He was like, so you make records? Like, he was.
So you think the Black Mamba thing is like a persona he's putting on? Do you think it's? And he's probably like a.
I've never really followed it that much, somebody's got to be that guy. You know, somebody have to kind of be that guy? Especially,
you're right. It's because it's not like. He's not like a player like Iverson who causes
it like a white light.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's.
You get bleeped. You're the only person that gets bleeped on this show.
What did he say? What did the robot
say? White wife.
It's so crazy.
Did you get it to work? No?
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't keep up with hockey though, because Pat, PR, and I
are jumped on the bandwagon.
We're hockey machines.
We love hockey.
Hockey's fun.
It is fun to watch in person.
Good spectator sport.
Yeah, it is.
Got to bundle up.
It's a
especially in that luxury booth.
Yeah.
Keep those booths real cold.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
That is the way to go to a sporting event. The luxury booth.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. It's like it is. The isolation alone is pretty amazing.
What about the vegan sloppy Joe stadium? How good is that?
They give like tempeh vegan chili.
Uh huh.
Did you grow up going to games, the Knick games?
Yeah,
and stuff?
So check this out. In fourth grade, Dick Barnett was a coach of the Knicks.
Yeah.
And his daughter, Tana Barnett, was in my fourth grade class.
Whoa!
And my mom's boyfriend at the time had season tickets to the Knicks. Oh. We used to go and take photographs. And so we had season tickets. We would go. If Tana was on the sidelines, we could go down on the sidelines and take pictures. Oh, and so this is like Earl Monroe, Walt Frazier.
And you're on the baseline. Yes. Like, hang it.
Yes. Taking pictures. I actually have a picture. You know, a picture that I took ended up in the Daily News in the sports section of Earl Monroe. I have it at home, and I have the photo credit of it. Yes.
Oh,
and
my God.
And I used to go to Jets games also and take pictures at Jet games.
Amazing. That's an amazing. Are you still like looking at the Knicks like maybe someday? Or do you
Yeah. Now I just basically watch the playoffs and the NBA, if that. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm not really following it that hard. But I also went to the first ever Islanders game.
Oh,
they're getting ready to close the Nassau Coliseum.
Oh, they are?
This is their last season.
It is.
So they played their first game ever was against the Boston Bruins, and the game started with a fight. It was like, welcome to the NHL, 15-minute brawl before the game even started.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I just watched the 30 for 30, the one about the Texas billionaire who came in to buy the Islanders at one point, and then said, like, I don't have any money. Anyways, basically, they were like, what? And it, like, crippled the team. Yeah, it's crazy.
I was just kidding.
It's a crazy thing.
Is that clock adjusted for daylight savings time? So what time is it?
2:30. 1:48.
Oh, it is right. Ish.
But it's only the time of the second, and it's always that time.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Perfect.
I'm scared.
Wow. So, like, what? So, you know what? I'm interested. What was the experience like with the film? You started composing, right?
Yeah.
When did that happen? Like, did you just sort of like want to do it at some point, or you sort of like found it?
Well, my forte was writing and producing instrumental music.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I don't write lyrics. I don't even really hear lyrics when I listen to music. Wow. And so I always felt like scoring films was a perfect, you know, venue for my skill set. And super lucky. I mean, my whole career is all luck. That's the thing. The whole music business is all luck. And you have to be in it. You have to have a little bit of talent to have your foot in the door. But I always said it's 10% talent and 90% luck and timing. It seems like that's the ratio.
Yeah.
But so David Fincher requests the Duss Brothers to do the score for Fight Club, and that was the first, you know,
your entrance.
Yes. and definitely one of my proudest works, for sure.
What a great fact, man.
And just amazing experience, and working with him, he was the only instruction he gave at the very beginning of the project, he said, have you ever seen The Graduate? And I said, of course. And he said, you know how perfect the music in The Graduate is for that movie? And I said, yeah. And he's like, that's why I want the music for Fight Club. And he's exactly, do that. That's what he said. And that was it. Those were the only notes he gave. And so he's an amazing director. I mean, we met with him. They were still, you know, they basically had a script. And what he does is he knows exactly where every light is going to be placed and what color gel is going to be on it before they start filming. Usually as a composer, they give you 6 weeks, like 6 weeks before the movie's coming out. Essentially,
they give you a cut.
Yeah, the movie's already edited and locked and everything's done.
Yeah.
So this was before, you know, they were still Fincher was still in script when we started talking about music.
Whoa.
And then as they started filming, he would send the dailies and start composing, and at a certain point he would come over once a week and he would hear the progress on everything, and he'd basically say, oh my god, that's great, oh, that makes me see the scene in a completely different way, it's a whole, I love it, and then on ones he didn't like, I don't really like that one, which is great, because,
yeah, perfect.
Because it's like, okay, you know, I can work with that, you know,
yeah,
when people sort of come at you with like, oh, I kind of like this, but if it could be more,
right,
and then that's when you know it's going to suck,
right.
You
know? It's the kiss of death.
It is the kiss of death. But Fincher knew exactly what he wanted, so you know it was either it worked or it didn't, which was great. And I mean, I feel like it was an 18-month process, which is one of the reasons why I feel like it came out so well.
Yeah,
because I hadn't had enough time to work on it and let things marinate.
Yeah, it feels right, which is
a big part of, you know, the marination process is a big part of making music that's good. But yeah, and the movies is fantastic. It still holds up.
It's like such an interesting moment in time. Did you know it watching those dailies? Where you're like, oh, this is going to be really cool.
About the movie?
Well, I knew from the script. I knew from the book.
Oh, okay.
From the book and the script.
Yeah.
I mean, and I knew it was a cool movie.
Awesome. Speaking of marination, you don't eat the meat.
Don't eat the meat.
Fuck the meat.
Nope.
Have the meat.
No.
Meat is murder.
What is it? Probably 30 years I haven't eaten meat.
Yeah.
Before that, I was a big meat eater.
I ate the meat.
I do miss the pork ribs.
Yeah, there's a lot to miss about barbecue.
And yeah, and prime rib.
Do you like when people ask you about it?
I have, when people ask you why. Mine was health reasons. I was in my 20s when I first started making money in the music. Actually, the first time an A&R person ever took me out to dinner was this guy Mio Vukovic took me to Chai Dynasty right up here in Los Feliz on Hillhurst.
Of course. Yeah.
And it was fancy Chinese. It was a fancy Chinese food restaurant, and it was so good that when I first started getting money in the music business,
you went there every day,
twice a day.
I'd go there.
I'd have fried pork dumplings for lunch, and then come back, and they had some crazy stuff there. They had this aromatic shrimp that was batter fried shrimp, then rolled in this candy corn syrup.
Encrusted
we're gonna get you on this level.
So I was eating crazy shit, and I was always good about going to get physical, you know, go to the doctor. Even in my 20s, you know, I'd go every year and get a physical, and that after a year of eating like that, the doctor, my cholesterol, I was 20, I don't know, 5 or something, and my cholesterol was over 300.
Shit.
And I was
bad. I know science.
That's crazy. And the doctor said, you're gonna, the doctors told me I would literally, they said, you're gonna die in your 30s if you keep going like this. And so I said, well, what should I eat? And so they gave me the American Heart Association diet, which was 3 ounces of meat, which is not enough meat to make it worth, you know, getting that much food. So I just slowly started eliminating red meat and chicken. I just noticed I felt better, and then I stopped eating dairy, and that's when I noticed the biggest difference, and just had more energy.
Same here, man.
And when you eat, you actually feel energized. Like, I used to associate that bloated, tired, lethargic feeling
with satisfaction
of having a good meal. But, when you actually eat and then, you know, feel like you can be a productive person, and it's a much better feeling. So it's interesting, the change, you know, your perception of what feels good. Because I remember just pigging out and just thinking, oh, this is heaven.
Yeah. Completely.
Did everything else line up afterwards? Because that's how it happened for me with, like, the animal ethics and shit.
You've done that
fucking 4 times, man. We trapped your foot.
Well, you know, I like to delude myself with the fact that maybe when I was in high school, after school, I would eat 2 Big Macs.
Yeah, the 2 for $2 deal. Dude.
Yeah,
they were healthy back then.
Every day. That's my delusion that, you know, back then it was before factory farming got gnarly, but I'm sure not.
Nah, I think that was already in play.
But yeah, so, I, yeah, the, all that stuff is just ancillary.
It's the first wave
for me. For me, it's just the first wave. You know, I think I honestly believe that there are different body types, and some people probably need to eat meat, yeah, you know, to be healthy or for their mental sanity, yeah, or whatever. They need something that's in meat. But I just think eating meat that's been fed GMO corn and pumped full of antibiotics, that's not
even meat anymore.
That's killing people, you know. Yeah, that's and so my objection is that people should just be more, you know, aware that if you want to have a long, healthy life, you got to put, you know, you got to eat healthy food, you know, is what it comes down to. And I, you know, I think probably eating farm raised, you know, beef is probably really good for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You are what you eat.
Yeah.
That's the whole deal.
You're pretty beefy.
You did it kind of for the same reasons, for health reasons.
Yeah. Just because I was massively overweight and then cut out meat.
Come on. That's so ridiculous.
But kept dairy until, like, for another 10 years. Mm-hmm. But that was when I felt the biggest difference. Yeah. I lost, like, 80 pounds as soon as I stopped eating meat. But the difference between not eating dairy, just, I felt, like, fucking clean. Yeah.
And the thing is you don't miss it. I mean, that's the thing I get the most from people. It's like, oh, I could maybe be vegetarian, but I couldn't give up dairy.
I miss meat, though, like a motherfucker.
Hell yeah.
Oh, man. I eat it all mess.
Yeah, you eat it all mess.
I do. But I pay a little bit of attention.
Or eggs, dairy.
Eggs or dairy.
Yeah. But also chicken, period. So, yam it in. Scramble it up.
That's so funny. What do you like doing the most? Like, of all
skiing. Skiing is my passion.
You just were like, you had it out before I finished the question.
Skiing.
I live to ski.
Did you grow up or did you
find it? No. I didn't pick up skiing until my mid 20s.
Nice.
Oh my gosh. And like, how often do you ski?
A lot.
Yeah?
Last year I got over 50 days of skiing in.
Oh my gosh.
And this year I've got over 30 days so far, but it's been a rough season, not a lot of snow.
Yeah. I recently went back to snowboarding after not snowboarding for a long time.
I won't hold that against you.
And what is that?
And just a natural hatred between
it is, though. It's on, even when you're out there, I was going to say. Yeah, I was like, there's a different
what's kind of like the annoying thing about snowboarders, and then you tell
that them they stop all over the fucking mountain.
Yeah, they do.
That's the first most annoying thing. The second most annoying thing is that they're totally erratic. So they're going like this, and then all of a sudden they just make hard, sharp turns without warning.
Considering.
Yeah.
It's true.
And most of them are gapers, meaning that they really probably shouldn't.
They're huge assholes.
They just shouldn't be out there. You know, they shouldn't. They're on runs that are above their ability, and so they're fucking it up for everybody else and making it really dangerous for even people who are good skiers, because they're just obstacles.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, some of my best friends are snowboarders. So, you know, but they have the etiquette. You know, they came from skiing and they know, you know.
Yeah, some of them.
Some of them. Ski or snowboard?
None.
Me neither.
Nothing in the snow? You don't?
No, my son is working on a compilation reel of we call it frosting, and so when the snowboarders are just stopped in the middle of the run, as they almost always are, you ski right up next to them and kick your heels and just cover them out of frosting. and so he has his GoPro. He's the wizard with the GoPro, so he has the GoPro on the pole in front of him.
No way.
So he catches the full frosting on video.
It looks amazing. It's
probably
in HD.
It's it's great footage. Yeah,
those GoPros, man, those are incredible.
So did you ski?
No, I didn't. Oh, in terms of when I was younger,
did you ever ski? Yeah,
I skied like a few times, like nothing crazy.
You snowboarded from early on,
just from skateboarding. So I was skateboarding a ton, then I was like, oh, I'll do that. And then just going back to it though, the mountain had me, my friend.
Oh, it did.
Yeah, the mountain had me. Where do you normally like to go?
I go up to Tahoe, a place called Alpine Meadows.
Nice.
Which is going. Which is a sweet.
Yeah.
You
are. Yep.
Yeah, you got to come up there. It's sweet.
Awesome. And you raved about this spot, right? Wasn't it a ski spot in Colorado?
Crested Butte, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But it was summertime, which is fucking cooler. Like you said, Tahoe's gorgeous in the summer.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Did you ever go up? Did you ever go up the mountain when you were there?
No, I will not. I'll never go up the mountain.
And did you do it? Did you? I mean, like, so you got into your 20s.
Yeah.
And you are you like expert? You're going all the way.
I've seen some vids.
I'm pretty much an expert skier.
Nice, yeah. Man.
There's some stuff that I won't do.
What an interesting sort of like, because normally people don't pick that particular thing to be like, that's the thing I want to do.
I know, I just, it's just such a, I just, the adrenaline, and I like skiing, the more dangerous the run, the more I like it, you know, the more the more exciting it is for me.
Do you listen to music when you do it?
I don't. I have.
Because a lot of people do.
I know, have done it, but to me, it detracts. I mean,
oh yeah.
The level that I'm normally skiing at when the conditions are good, I'm using 100% of my brain. That's got to be why I like the feeling is so good, because
completely consumed.
You're processing so much information. You're going so fast. Your eyes are out taking it all in, and all these micro muscle movements, and there's so much going on that to me the music kind of is overwhelming and detracts from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in your relationship to it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally different.
We listen. Sometimes we'll listen. You know, we'll have it on the speaker on the lift and just be listening on the lift.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. I'm developing, as I get older, a lift phobia, which is really kind of a horrible, which is kind of horrible to my passion to be skiing.
Yeah, that gets in the way.
But I'm becoming phobic on the lifts. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. What is...
They go... I mean, to be fair, I was just on one, and as soon as I got to the other mountain, it was so high up at a certain point.
Yeah, it's not the height. To me, I'm afraid of just it being stuck on it for, you know, that the lift will break, and that I'll be stuck on it for 3 hours.
Oh, I see.
Does that happen?
And it's a control thing. It's like, you know.
Yeah. God. Yeah. That would be the worst. Losing control and being like, oh, we're just sitting.
How high
really are just sitting?
Some, they're high.
They're
60 feet, 70 feet, 80 feet.
Yeah. But then you'd fall into snow and it would be pleasant.
No. Not for me.
Nope.
You'd break.
That would be a thud for sure. You'd
definitely don't want to fall from a lift.
Don't fall off the lift. Train's here, boys. All aboard.
How are we doing?
Yeah, let's check that, because I think
my God, dead on.
Dead on.
All right.
Good night. That was fantastic.
Train's coming.
Sincerely, thank you for doing this. This
pleasure.
Is amazing.
Yeah, man, this is
awesome talking to you.
Part one of our 4-part series with Mike. And
I feel like the stuff we were talking about before we recorded was probably more interesting.
Yes.
Isn't that how it always goes?
It's always how it goes. Yeah, that's why George is like, I'll be right back. I'm going to get this.
Guys, we should be in the it was great. PR Machine, you did great. Kept kicking
Thank you, PR Machine.
Just kicking it.
Shout out to Biggie.
Oh, shit. Yep. Shout out to Biggie.
OG, Bobby, Josh. Hey. OG, Bobby, Josh. Woo. OG, Bobby, Josh. Josh. OG, Bobby, Josh. Hey. 100 bands on your head, get the job done. Throw it up, nigga, where you from? Whole hood hot, cause your nigga hitting licks. Ain't made a meal yet, but he still nigga rich. Stick him up, stick him up, stick him. Stick him up. How you want it, nigga? Full of the semi. Looking for the cash. Searching for the bag. Young nigga wild. Throwing up flags. Shooters on the roof with a scope. Money back on treat you like the Pope. Like the king. Work the blocks like the Kimbe in the post. Cook him up. Nigga hit it with the folk. Hit it. Word on the street, I'm a suspect. Hanging with the killers in the projects. Tato on the barrel, keep quiet. Catch a nigga slipping from behind. OG, Bobby, Josh. OG, Bobby, Josh. OG, Bobby, Josh. OG, Bobby, Josh. Hey. It's the niggas that you trust that'll probably turn fed. Hey. Hating on your heart cause you're rocking her man. Especially if your money long, guarantee it turn heads. Ray, Ray, turn it on, gotta watch the Sherman head. Hey. Jealousy, that's a bitch, nigga trait. Hey. These niggas snakes wanna know what you make. Grab me at hold, do you like the wrist tape? Young nigga running with the cannon. Never let a nigga see your panic. Yo, boys,
was in the hood working with the Hispanics. Ooh. On the phone with the plug, niggas speaking Spanish. Hey. Word on the street, I'm a suspect. Hanging with the killers in the projects. Tato on the barrel, keep quiet. Catch a nigga slipping from behind. Boom. OG, Bobby, Josh. Hey. OG, Bobby, Josh. Ooh. OG, Bobby, Josh. Josh. OG, Bobby, Josh. Hey.
GT Films. GT Films. GT.